Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And good morning. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat, and Dr. Umat, you are wearing your red sweater. Valentine's Day coming up.
That's on the 14th.
On the 14th, but it's the pre-Valentine's, which is why I have little hearts all over my sweater.
See, in my house, we have red everywhere because that's the color of celebration in Asia.
Wonderful.
And this is the Chinese
New Year.
Actually, I wanted to ask you, are you going to do something special?
Oh, our house is decorated with dragons. We have a 7 or 8 foot dragon made out of, you know, paper and plastic and stuff, but he's a great big red and gold and green dragon hanging in our hallway.
I love that.
And another smaller one about 3 feet on our dining table. And then we have bright red vases and flowers scattered everywhere. And yeah, so we've got a bunch of Chinese who'll show up at our house tomorrow.
Wonderful.
And it'll be a day of games and contests and singing and
but why tomorrow? Why not today?
It's a 2-week celebration.
Yes. Isn't that just wonderful? I mean, instead, I wish our New Year was like that. Celebrate for 2 weeks instead of just one night, you know, and everyone sleeps in and then it's just, you know, whatever people do.
So, so during the 2-week celebration, is there something different every day or is it similar?
No, it's just, it's called the Spring Festival, literally, if you translate it from Mandarin.
Okay.
And so it's not the New Year's, it's the Spring Festival.
Ah.
And so the Spring Festival lasts for a couple of weeks, welcoming spring and the, you know, the warmer weather, etc. Although, you know, early February is a little early to be welcoming the warmer weather. But that's what it's all about.
Okay.
And it's all about family.
Yes.
China, traditionally, right now, of course, they're in the doldrums. I don't know how many people they're moving this year. But you realize that in China, more than 500 million people go home in one weekend.
Wow.
One weekend. It was as if the entire population of the United States, every man, woman, and child, and 50% more than that, all together were to get on the trains, buses, and airplanes and go across the country in one day.
Wow.
Wow. Yes.
Wow. Woo! So they spend the New Year with family?
It's a big, big family.
Okay. Okay.
And since, you know, we have a house full of expats, people that have immigrated to America, their families are all in China.
Right.
Okay. So they come to my house.
Okay. Yes. The celebratory house. Is there a particular food or a dish that is saved for celebration?
All the ladies are bringing food. And there will be a wide variety of Asian meals.
And when does this start, Dr. Umat? And I would like to know that we can...
You know, it varies every year because it doesn't follow the solar calendar.
Okay.
You know, our spring, summer, winter, and fall.
No, she was asking about tomorrow's celebration.
Oh, tomorrow.
So that we can stop by and sample.
Everybody shows up around noon.
We'd fit in, right? That we wouldn't look out of place at all.
Yeah, and they kind of break up the games so that men and women – have an equal chance of of winning.
Yeah, because we don't want the women to win all the games and the men to feel
bad. Because we have like a push-up contest.
Oh, yeah. Oops.
The push-up contest. And so the ladies are not going to win the push-up contest.
Well, that's gonna be Mandy might. Yeah.
And no, she can do 8 or 9 military push-ups, you know, but I won last year.
Oh.
And my only real competition is a very fit guy in the 40s, I think, lives in the gym. I saw his gun, his arms last year. I said, okay, he's going to whip my elderly ass. But I beat him by 1.
Whoa, and, very good, Dr. Mixon.
This year he is in Florida fixing up their vacation home. So
okay.
I'm all alone. I have no competition tomorrow. I've got it. I'll knock out about 60. And you know, the rest of them will quit in the 20s.
You get to keep the trophy. I love that.
Yeah, but then for the women, they have contests where we put a bunch of plastic cups turned upside down. And you have to go through and turn all of the cups right side up, and then the next person has to come and turn them all back down.
Okay.
That's fine motor dexterity, and women always win that one.
Because it's how fast you can do it?
It's how fast you can do it. And so, and it's a team sport, so all the ladies will be against all the men. And they always whip our asses out because you can't. Guys, we've got the power, but we aren't as fast and dexterous as women.
Okay.
You know. So, but then there's the limbo contest.
Oh, yes.
Which favors the young.
Yes. You know? Ivory will be all over that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the short, small, young, limber people will do the limbo a lot better than me in my mid-70s.
Oh, that's awesome. Is there a greeting that you say during the Chinese New Year, or is it Happy New Year?
There is a Chinese version of Happy New Year, which I butcher terribly.
Okay, so I won't have you say
try
that.
It on the air.
There we go. We don't want you to say something else and get our show in trouble.
So, but yeah, it's going to be a fun day.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be very busy and, you know, lots of happy, smiling people. And this is the most patriotic pro-America group you will ever come across because they've escaped socialism. Mm-hmm. They've escaped a one-party state that controls every aspect of their lives. And they're here where they feel free for the first time in their lives. So this is a very, very pro-America, pro-democracy, pro-constitution group of people.
All right.
So, yeah.
Well, happy Chinese New Year. Or is it Lunar New Year?
Well, it's actually the Lunar New Year.
Lunar New Year.
We call it the Chinese New Year, but all of Asia uses the Lunar New Year.
Okay. So if you're celebrating and listening today, Happy New Year.
That's right.
So do people go like to the International District or is there something or
There'll
is it
be
just
parades
at home?
Down in the International District too.
Okay. Yeah. I bet those are amazing.
Okay. In fact, they'll probably have the big dragon parade, you know, that'll have
all the people underneath them.
Right.
Okay. Is that a good thing to do, like to go on this day? Is there, like, just to see the parade or not really?
Probably would be fine, yeah. It's going to be a little chilly today, but
yeah.
Rain tomorrow, but not today, though. You should be okay. Just bundle up.
Okay. I was just curious.
I love that, yes.
Great.
Yeah. Yes, love seeing
that. So anyway, that's my household this weekend.
Okay.
Well, I'll be watching the Super Bowl.
That's right, your Super Bowl. And you know what? I'll be celebrating my grandson's birthday.
There you go.
Yep, we will be at the trampoline zone and then mini golf with the family in the dark. It's light up mini golf is what he has chosen.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, okay. So that'll be fun. He's turning 6.
Yeah, that's
fun. So that's what we're all doing tomorrow at some point. So,
yeah, it's a busy, fun weekend.
You know
what I liked about the drive this morning was light.
Yes. Oh, and the sunrise.
Yeah.
I can see
coming to work in the dark every day was a real pit. But yeah, we're getting close.
We're getting closer.
Yes.
But again, that's the difference. In the West, we do solar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Asia does lunar. We do solar.
Okay.
So in the West, spring starts the first day that the days are longer than the nights.
Okay.
Which will be late March, about
March
21st or 20 or 21st.
My hubby's birthday is the first full day. Yeah.
I think 20th this year because we had a leap year.
Yes.
So February was an extra day long.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, summer starts
on my birthday.
On the solstice. when the day and night are equal.
Uh-huh.
Or no, I say summer is the longest day of the year.
The longest day.
The longest day of the year is the beginning of summer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then fall, of course, you know, when it's equal again and moving the first day that the day is shorter And then, of course, the winter solstice, which, you know, the longest, coldest night of the year is when we say winter has started.
There you go.
It's kind of odd, though. You know, now that the days start to get longer, we say it's winter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in some respects, the lunar calendar makes more sense.
It does.
It's more attuned to the real seasons.
What's really going on?
Oh, well.
Well, if you made it through the whole winter solstice in the last several weeks, it's starting to get light. And you did it. Mm-hmm. You made it through the dark.
Right.
And, you know, that can be really hard for some people.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Especially with SAD, the seasonal affective disorders.
Well,
so we're on the uptake of light.
I know, as Jerry mentioned, you know, it's the fact that when you leave home, it's dark. You come back, it's dark. And your day is spent, you know, for us in our office, we're lucky we have windows and there's light. Mm-hmm. But for some people where they're working in a cubby where there's no natural light and they're in the middle of some building, I really feel, you know, like, yeah. Oh my gosh.
So you and I are lucky because we have the corner offices.
We do.
And I'm in a studio first thing in the morning, and so it is dark.
Yeah.
But I'm there, so I
the downside of mine is I've got so much glass because I've got two sides of my office are all window. And it's cold in there because all that glass is radiating cold in there.
Yes.
The heating system can't keep it up. So
I know.
I end up wearing a sweater in my office all winter long.
That's the real reason he does exercises in his office is to warm up.
Warm up, yeah.
Yes.
Cold too.
Well, believe it or not, you're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We have Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio live today and also Dr. Samira Umat. Let me give you that phone number so you can get ready to go. Phone lines are open. If you've got a question about your health, a diagnosis, boy, the last few weeks have been so busy with your questions. Keep them coming. We love that you are part of the show, and that's why we're here each and every week, Leading Edge Medicine. Here is that number to get through today. We are live always, most always, unless it's a holiday weekend. 800-465-8770 is the number to call with your questions. That's 800-465-8770. Now, before we dive in, it is just a little after 8. Today is the day. The gallery tests are happening. This is that test for 50 different types of cancers. It's a screening test. Mm-hmm. And that is happening today at our Linwood, Tacoma, and Kirkland Longevity Clinics. And for somebody going, oh, that's today. Can I still schedule an appointment? What is the answer for that?
No, absolutely, you can.
Okay.
Yeah, well, our teams are in all three locations today. So just give them a call and give them a heads up. They will give you a time.
Okay.
You are able to come in because everybody's there today. So it's better for them to do it today. So please come on over if this is of interest to you. This being February being Cancer Prevention Month, and just the fact that, you know, the incidence of cancer is rising. It's rising in younger people. And if you have a family history or a personal history, then this just brings knowledge, brings peace of mind if it is negative. And if there is a positive result, then the sooner you find out, the better your outcome will be. I know there's a fear about cancer, but you have to put aside that fear, especially if there's a strong family history and a personal history.
Yeah.
And you just must find out sooner rather than later.
If you don't find out until you have symptoms, it's usually too late.
Yeah.
The symptoms mean it has spread, it's hitting other organs, it's damaging nerves and stuff all over your body. And so, you know, the idea is find out before you have symptoms. Let us do a screening test. Let us find it before you have even a suspicion you've got a cancer, because that's the time it's the easiest to save you.
That's right. The outcomes are better. Treatments are better. The survival post-cancer diagnosis is longer. Mm-hmm. And so for all of those reasons, it's just better to just say, let's just go ahead and find out. And, you know, the thing is, there isn't any other screening like this.
No.
Because with the other screenings, you're screening for one thing and there are very few. This one is just a blood test looking for DNA changes. You come in, you have it drawn, and then you just...
Go home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in a couple of weeks, we've got a result for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are more than 100 different cancers that we have identified. Other than this test, we can only screen for 5.
Wow.
Okay. There are 5 cancers that we have typical screening tests for. This, for the first time in history, we can screen for 50 different cancers. That's half of all the known cancers.
Yeah.
So, you know, would you rather go back five times for five different tests to only screen for 5% of the cancers? Mm. Or would you rather go one test and screen for 50 cancers, 10 times as many cancers in one test on one day for one fee?
Mm. Yep. And today is the day that that is happening at Longevity Clinics. They start in at 9 o'clock this morning.
That's
is that
right?
Mm-hmm. But you can call right now if you'd like to make that appointment. So we wanted to do that first thing this morning, let you know that there is still room for you and you can make that appointment. It's 866-86-YOUNG. That number again is 866-86-YOUNG. Just let them know you want the Galleri test and to get a scheduled time for that in Tacoma, Linwood, or in our brand new beautiful Kirkland facility as well. All right, we are going to talk medicine and all things health and aging in just a moment. We are going to take a quick break and we will be right back. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there and be ready with your questions. The phone lines are open for you. You can give us a call at 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. And good morning. We got some good vibrations going on. The sun may be out today, or at least we'll get some sunshine among those clouds. We call them sun breaks when that happens. Sure. And that's a good thing.
This is the only place I've ever lived where we have sun breaks.
Breaks, yes. Yeah, I think that's the weatherman's way of saying, see,
that's
I'm not
right.
wrong.
That's
we
right.
Get all the time, except there'll be breaks.
There will be sunshine. Breaks. That's right. So if
breaks
you do get sun,
clouds,
yeah, you can get mad at
call
your,
them sun breaks.
Your meteorologist. Woo!
Yeah,
all
you're right. It's a meteorologist. He did that.
So they say you could get rain. There's a chance of rain, sunbreaks, and cloud. So they cover it all so that you can,
whatever happens, I'm right.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I should do that. I should figure out what to say so that whatever I say, I'm right.
I'm right, see? Oh, good morning, Leading Edge Medicine here. Dr. Umat in the studio, Dr. Mixon too, and our phone line. Look at those lights going off. We've got several calls, so let's jump right in with Mark from Edmonds. We have Mark from Edmonds calling in, so let's check in with him.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Out today, or at least we'll get some sunshine.
Mark, you got to turn your radio down or off.
There we go. There we go. All right, Mark, are you there? Okay, Mark may have set the phone down to go make some coffee. Mark, are you there? Okay, let's keep Mark on hold and let's pop over to Paul and let's talk to Paul. Good morning, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Good morning. I was here a couple months ago. I passed a stone out my ureter, and then I subsequently went to my doctor, local doctor, GP, and they determined that it was a calcium oxalate stone, or had those in my urine. And so that got me looking online and looking at, information on kidney stones and oxalates and so forth. And I saw an interview with a lady named Sally K. That's her middle initial. Norton is her last name. And she's got a degree in nutrition science and I think another degree in public health. But she had her own experiences with oxalates. And one of the things I saw in a podcast where she was being interviewed, she made a statement that kind of perked up my ears, was that she said that it can interfere with your body's ability to utilize hyaluronic acid because it'll bind with that hyaluronic acid. And so I thought I would call that up and mention that to you because I remember our doctor, you were had mentioned something about your skin was an issue that you wanted to try to find, figure something out. And so that's just, I thought I'd throw that out at you and see what you know.
Hyaluronic acid is basically a compound that we use in our skin to make it kind of fluffy and puffy, so we don't get real thin skin that you can see through. It's also very important in our joints. It's the lubricant in our joints that keeps us from rubbing away our cartilage too quickly. So, you know, you don't want to get rid of your hyaluronic acid. You know, the high oxalate foods are basically green leafy vegetables and beets, spinach, squash, cocoa.
All your nuts and seeds.
Yeah. I mean, all the stuff that we keep telling people to use, the healthy foods are also rich in oxalates. So when we have somebody who is a stone former and we put them on a low oxalate diet, we're actually taking away a lot of the things that have the polyphenols and the steel beans and the compounds that protect us against cancer and premature aging. So it's a healthier diet for that person because it helps to prevent them from forming stones. But overall, it's a crummy diet for long-term health and cancer and heart disease prevention. So,
The oxalate crystals though can also get deposited in the skin, in joints, in the organs in the body as well, supposedly. So,
people that don't tolerate oxalates, who form oxalate crystals, are, genetically disadvantaged. Because the things that are healthy for the rest of us turn out to be unhealthy for them. And I don't really see any good trade-offs on their behalf, because the low oxalate diet is not nearly as healthy a diet for the things that actually do debilitate and kill most Americans. So, but if you've ever had a kidney stone, you'll change your diet pretty dramatically to avoid a second kidney stone.
Yes.
Whether you're told it's a healthy one or not.
Oh, boy, yes.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Fortunately, I did not have anything stuck in my kidney. It just passed through. Mm-hmm. But it did for a brief, for about a 10-hour period, I was nauseous and all that. So.
Yeah.
But it wasn't painful.
No, I agree. Well, okay. You're lucky, because it can be the most agonizing pain that I've seen grown men weep in the emergency room with a kidney stone.
Yeah.
It's miserable. Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you for the call, sir.
Thank you so much for that, Paul.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okie dokie.
Okay. Take care.
You know, it just highlights how important diet is, yet how we cannot sometimes individualize it and yet be right, because for some people a high protein diet is beneficial, and for some a high protein diet, with those that have kidney function, high protein diet is dangerous.
Yes.
And then for some people, you know, they need to eat more plant-based versus animal-based, yet animal protein is so necessary for muscle, and it's so complex.
Mm. Well, and it is, and we are not, human beings are not one genetically equal group.
Mm.
We all have our species. Homo sapiens sapien is a group of subspecies. We're not quite as different as canines, where you've got things like the Great Dane and the Pekingese, gigantic differences. But we do have significant differences.
Mm.
We have the Nordic types who's are very pale, fair skin because they have genetically developed to get all the vitamin C they can get.
Mm.
They do not want any pigment in their skin to block the vitamin D because they don't get much sun way up north.
Okay.
And they tend to be very, very tall and lean, willowy. You know, on the other extreme, you've got South African areas of sub-Saharan Africa with very, very dark skin because they get so much solar radiation.
Mm.
They need all that melanin in their skin to block the radiation from going through and damaging, you know, their bodies. Mm. You've got the Pygmies, a subgroup down in Africa, and the Aborigines in Australia that are very, very different.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the Asians that are, again, a subgroup that actually seem to have inbred with the Dacinians, while the rest of us were having our thing with the Cro-Magnons and
Neanderthals and Neanderthals, Neolithic Rubes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I am almost 3% Neanderthal. So,
who called you that, Dr. Mixon? That's right.
23andMe.
Called me that. Wow, seriously?
Yeah. So I have a high Neanderthal component in my genome. I also, though, have 0.3% of me is sub-Saharan African.
Hmm.
So one of my Viking / Neanderthal, you know, rapers and reavers working their way down the coast of England and Europe had an assignation with someone from a bit further south than the usual people that we took captive.
Oh, okay.
So
you're blaming it on your genes.
Yeah, so it's not my fault.
It's not my fault. It's parents.
It's my genes.
That's right.
It's these tight, you know, tight genes I wear.
That's right. Exactly that.
There you go.
Yeah. Let me give you one example. Lactose intolerance.
Yeah.
Okay. Most Europeans, those of us of Caucasian ancestry, we tolerate milk and lactose just fine until we're about 25 or 30 years old.
Mm.
Then most European ancestry, by the time you're 30 or 40, we don't tolerate lactose anymore. You know, we are not designed to be drinking milk that late. Sub-Saharan Africans can usually tolerate lactose till quite late in life, 60s, wow. 70s, maybe all their lives without getting lactose intolerant. Asians, because they're a different subspecies, run out of lactose toleration usually in their teens and don't tolerate milk even in their late teens. And so, you know, just look at that one single trait, how varied we are based on ethnic groups.
Yeah. Okay?
So, yes, we have susceptibility to different cancers, different heart disease, different you know, organ problems based on where our ancestors grew up and the environments they were exposed to that shaped their genome that we've inherited.
Right. Mm. I mean, you know, if you think about it, people remained in the areas where they grew up. It wasn't like today where we're traveling everywhere eating different kinds of foods. They ate the same kind of food. They stayed where they were born and they died where they were born.
They bred with the boy or the girl within the village or at least the next village.
Right.
Yeah. For most of human history, most human beings never traveled more than about 20 miles from where they were born.
Mm.
You know, so folks in sub-Saharan Africa did not have babies with people from Norway.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they never,
except your family.
Except, yeah, my particular group was warlike, you know, and worshipped Odin and wanted to have the Valkyries, you know, come down and select them to be Odin's maidens. Yeah.
There's okay.
Mention my ancestry for a moment, though. Do you know why Odin, the one-eyed god who saw all, how he lost his eye?
No.
Isn't it odd? He's the one-eyed god who sees all. But Odin gave up his left eye in exchange for understanding the heart of a woman.
Oh, wow.
Because no man understands women. And so the god gave up his eye so he could see into the heart of women.
Oh, interesting. I wonder if that was offered today. No, probably not. Hey, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine and your phone calls. Mark will be with you in just a moment. And we have, let's see, we have Lou on the line as well. And Hilmer will get to you as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine. And here's that number. You can get through as well and get in the calling queue. 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
Now, do you understand?
I wanna be free and feel the way I feel. woman.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine with Shania and Dr. Jerry Mixon.
Yeah,
and
where is Shania? I missed her.
I know. She's back touring.
I like the way you phrase that. Shania and Dr. Mixon.
And Dr. Mixon. There we go. But, you know, Dr. Umat, I'm guessing you are a big fan. I know I am. Yeah, Shania of, 17. Supporting her siblings at a young age after their parents died. You know, I just like, whoa,
yeah,
way to go,
but,
girl.
You know, there are so many good women that sing beautifully. Oh. The voices are amazing. Kelly Clarkson.
Yes.
And the Grammys. Well, Mighty
Boy.
Flowers. What a beautiful song.
That,
yeah.
That was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And it was good to see the joy that she exuded
right.
on stage.
Yeah.
And I think everybody was captured by that. And that was, they also had Tracy Chapman on there singing Fast Cars, which is, you know, she did that.
Yes.
Some 40 years
yes,
ago.
Yes.
And
I
came on
that.
With Luke Combs.
Yeah, yes,
and that
yeah.
has been dubbed one of the best of the Grammys this year. So,
yeah.
And then who? Joni Mitchell was yeah. on, and she was singing at 80.
Yes.
And,
she was. That was
singing.
Pretty incredible. Yeah.
Love
yeah.
from both sides I've now,
never
and
seen
she's
the
on
Grammys.
The other side.
Yeah,
I'm not even,
well, just flipping channels.
I just figured out where the Grammys were a month ago.
Yeah. There you go. Yes.
No, I don't go looking for.
Why are you people all excited about your granny?
Yeah.
Your nanas. Why don't they call them
yeah.
the nanas?
Yeah.
Oh, I liked that there were some happy moments. I saw more joyful moments in little highlight snippets
yeah.
on social media as opposed to the, can you believe this? You know, there was
right.
nothing like that this year that just
yeah.
ruined it for everybody.
No, I
so
don't.
I was thankful.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Nobody slapped anybody. Nobody
right.
jumped up while
right.
somebody was else.
I don't usually watch them, but I was just flipping channels and uh-huh. just stopped for a brief minute to see what was
just
going
a little
on.
Bit.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
see the highlights. That's
so
what
you
I
guys are talking
do.
About the singing and the grannies. Now, I sang yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I was up at Bellamedic. I've got a little rosacea spots on my cheeks that I wanted them to hit the use the IPL and make my little rosacea go away. And I was singing to the. I had all three of the estheticians
yeah,
in
you
the room.
Yeah, the audience.
They all like to you know to be there when the boss is getting fried. And, So as they're flashing me, you know, high intensities. And so
I'm singing,
you know, so I'm singing to them.
As they're lasering them.
Yeah.
Okay.
But,
or
you
to
know,
distract yourself.
Yes.
Sure. But I sang, you know, I sang some of my favorite songs. You know?
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
What did you sing?
Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny.
Okay. Yes. Oh, look at those phone lines flashing, Dr. Mixon. All right. Let's
oh,
take
you're
a phone
too funny
call.
Today.
All right, let's go. We have Mark on the line. Mark,
hello, Mark.
In Edmonds. Good morning. Welcome to the
hey.
Show, Mark.
Hey, guys. Hey, sorry for the earlier mix up.
That's okay. We got you back.
Anyway, speaking of itsy bitsy, it segues in very nicely to what I'm about to ask you.
Okay.
And it has to do with, over the years, I've been in and out of the emergency room because of AFib.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, I broke down and I'm on medication. I'm taking about 2.5 milligrams of Eliquis, the blood thinner.
Yes.
And I'm taking about 15 milligrams of metoprolol.
Yeah.
Metoprolol,
that's a beta,
yeah. It's a
beta
blocker.
A beta blocker.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And so I've been on that for about 2 months, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is what I'm concerned about, I believe, are the side effects.
Mm-hmm.
And
depression
effects
or erectile disorder?
Okay, there we go. yeah, speaking of itsy bitsy teeny weeny,
yes.
it appears my my penis has greatly shrunk.
Yes.
To the point where I have to call out a search party to go and find it. And
I understand. This is
yeah,
a common problem with beta blockers.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it is. Beta blockers trigger low blood pressure, fatigue,
mm-hmm.
depression,
mm-hmm.
and in men, erectile disorders. Yeah.
Well,
you know, they slow your heart rate. They keep it from racing along if you go into atrial fib, but the adverse effects are quite distressing for a whole lot of men. And so you might go back and just discuss this with your cardiologist and ask him about the possibilities of using a calcium channel blocker instead of a beta blocker.
Got it. By the way, my cardiologist is Ruben Maiden. Thanks to you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah, well, Ruben is my favorite cardiologist. He's a terribly smart guy. But he'll understand your issue and, you know, look for alternative medication pathways for you.
Got it. Okay. And would that also have to do with why all of a sudden my hair is falling out?
I've not seen that as an adverse effect, no.
Got it. Jeez.
Yeah, the most common hear about, you know, is fatigue and definitely poor libido. And also people can't exercise to capacity. They feel like they just can't catch their breath. Well, their heart rate just doesn't go up.
Their exercise capacity is greatly diminished.
Yes.
Yeah, because they can't speed up their heart rate in response to the exercise demands.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a conundrum, because it's like, oh, my heart's going in AFib, I want to stop that, but also it's attacking my my manliness here.
Yes, and it does.
I gotta decide which one.
And for the audience, especially the females in the audience, I want you to understand one of the basic differences in men and women. Okay, is men instinctively we derive our personal identity from two things. And that is our sexuality and our productivity, our ability to take care of those who depend on us, our wives, our children, and so on. If you want to pick a fight with any man anywhere on planet Earth, you impugn his sexuality or his ability to take care of those who depend on him, his productivity.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem we've got in Western society now is that since we put in the welfare state starting in the 1930s, we now tell men they are supposed to be non-productive somewhere in their 60s.
Mm.
And we take away their productivity at 60, 65. And then nature takes away their sexuality.
Mm.
And the guy is then left unmoored. He's not productive. He's not producing anything. He's not taking care of anybody. And his sexuality has gone away. And when a man loses those two things, it strikes to the core of who and what he is. One of the joys of longevity is our ability to give them back their strength, their energy, their drive, their ambition, and their sexuality. And that then allows them to become as productive as they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why at 76, I'm still working all day, every day, and half day on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I enjoy being productive. I enjoy taking care of my family. I enjoy creating new stuff and jobs for people and so on. We need these things. And, you know,
you like this, Dr. Mixon. This week, one of my patients told me that she's written a new book. It'll be published this year. And she's a grandma. And she says she went to the library to look for books about grandma. And all the grandmas were, you know, feeble and weak and loving, but not grandmas like today. So she's written a book about grandmas of today that are active and hiking and loving and yet doing things with their grandchildren.
Good
so
for her. Yes.
I told her I would share this story because it was inspiring.
And it should be, because when the human lifespan was in the 30s, and the minority of women made it to menopause.
Mm-hmm.
We drew up these stereotypes, and they were stereotypes because they were real.
Mm.
But now, with modern technology and the things we can do about the aging process, there's no reason for men or women to be, you know, tottering off to the nursing home in their 60s, 70s, or even their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
We can do something about it for the vast majority of us.
That's right.
So.
That's right.
All right.
Well, as always, good stuff, man. You always have good stuff. So, thanks for the advice.
Go see Dr. Maiden again and tell him about your problem. He'll fix it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for that, Mark. We want to get Jim in, at least get his question before we take our next break.
Okay.
Jim calling in from Kent. Hi there, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Jim.
Morning. I've had a chronic problem with my right wrist getting ganglion cysts. Very painful. And I get them to go away, they come back. Off and on for many, many years. Is there a long-term fix for that?
Ganglion cysts. Okay. for those of you out there who have never heard of a ganglion cyst.
Yeah, let's find out what it is. We'll take a break and then see if there's something he can do.
Well, I'll tell you what. No, let's go ahead and take the break.
Okay.
And yeah. I'll explain what a ganglion cyst is and how we get rid of them when we get back.
All right.
In the old days and now.
Yes, way back in the days. Yeah,
back when I was a young man.
Country doctor. All right, taking a break right now on Leading Edge Medicine. Here is that phone number to call with your question, like Mark and Paul and Jim so far today, 800-465-8770. We'll be back to talk about ganglion cysts in just a moment. Stay right there.
Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Sweet Caroline.
Bum, bum, bum. There we go. Oh boy, when we're on video, you're going to see all this in a couple months. Oh, welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine on this beautiful Saturday morning in February. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umet in the studio, and talking with Jim from Kent. Has a ganglion cyst on his wrist.
And he's had a series of them, it sounds
like. Wow. Okay, so, what is that, Dr. Mixon?
The ganglion cyst is a fluid-filled sac. And it forms either from within the joint, mostly in the wrist, where you've got all those little carpal bones coming together, or along the course of a tendon or a ligament. In order for tendons and joints to move, they've got this synovial membrane that surrounds them. And inside is a hyaluronic-rich fluid that provides a lubricant so things can move without wear and tear. Sometimes you get a weak point in that synovium, and it kind of balloons out. And so you get a water balloon formed. And over time, your body absorbs the water out of that stagnant pool of fluid, and it gets thicker and thicker and thicker until it's like a jelly. Mm. And sometimes these cysts can be so tight they feel rock hard.
Oh, wow.
Other times they're kind of spongy, but they just kind of bulge up. Usually, doctors will try to drain them. They put in a large bore needle and suck out that thick jelly. And then sometimes they'll put in a little bit of a corticosteroid, dexamethasone or something, into this cyst to try to shrink it up. They can still reform. If the steroid is sufficient to atrophy the membrane, it may go away for several years. If it doesn't atrophy, and it'll just fill back up with fluid, and then the only way to really be sure to get rid of it is surgery, to go in and just take out that entire membranous area and seal off that little leak. There's no other real great way. There's no pills, no shots, nothing else we can do except to drain them, maybe inject some steroid or surgically excise them.
Doctor, if you don't do anything to them, can they cause further damage?
No,
they're just annoying.
They get big.
Big and annoying.
And if it's big and hard,
it can be painful.
Well, it can be painful in part because it can actually impinge on nerves and blood vessels and so on. So if it's pushing on an artery or pushing on a nerve branch, it can be exquisitely painful.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay,
how big can those get, doctor?
You know,
like on a wrist?
Well, and that's, by the way, the most common place is on the extensor surface, on the top of your wrist, where those little carpals are close to the skin. And that's the number one spot, although I've also seen them along finger tendons or along the sides of the wrist. They don't usually get more than about a centimeter across at the biggest, simply because they get too painful. People don't put up with them, or they get much
bigger. They
want
to get them
that.
Off. Yeah. So like a pea, something like that.
Okay. Just a lump on the back of your wrist.
Right,
of the time.
Okay. Right. Where it doesn't really impede function. It can come in the way of function, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And so people want to do something about it. But a lot of times they will recur, it, like you said.
Okay, it sounds like that's happened to Jim over and over. Yeah. So maybe he needs to go in and finally get that taken care of.
He needs somebody to go in and do a surgical excision.
Right, right. It's non-cancerous.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not dangerous, but it's painful.
Painful.
And this is something, of course, if you're listening, don't try to drain it yourself, I would think. Never try to. You know, sometimes we think, well, I can just do that here at home. Throw some alcohol on it.
The old name for this was a Bible bump.
Yeah.
Oh.
And the reason the Bible bump got its name is Grandma would take the family Bible, put your hand, your wrist on the table, and whack it with that great big family Bible, and break the cyst.
Okay, so we don't, Dr. Mixon is talking about this. He's not recommending
that
this.
That is not my recommendation.
No, get that taken care of by a doctor.
Please don't
you have
do that.
That was the way Grandma did it.
Yeah.
That is not the way
not
your doctor is going to do it.
No, not the best. All right, we're going to travel north to the beautiful little Dutch town of Linden. We have Lou on the line. Welcome, Lou.
Hello,
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm a card-carrying Caucasian. I'm 73, and I have a question about milk, since you brought up milk, and that interests me more than the original question I had. So I wanted to ask you about colostrum and mention that I'm of mixed Northern European and Southern European ancestry, and when I was a child, I drank cow's milk three times a day, and
so
I ended up having recurring earaches over and over again. I had probably dozens and dozens of earaches, and I think it was because the cow's milk was causing me to have too much mucus building up in my eustachian tubes and causing infections. And finally, at age 11, a doctor told my parents I should have my tonsils out. After I had the tonsils out, they hemorrhaged, and I almost bled to death. Mm-hmm. And it actually changed the course of my life because I missed so much school during that time. But I recovered, and obviously, and I'm 73. And so I eat sheep cheese, goat milk. Occasionally I put that in my coffee. I like goat milk in coffee. And so I had the question basically I have is the cheese from goat and sheep safer than the cow's milk? As you mentioned, there's some association with
some people tend to some people tend to tolerate the proteins in goat milk or even sheep milk better than they do cow's milk. Not quite sure why. You know, it's just different enough that people that don't tolerate cow's milk may well tolerate sheep and goat milk.
Yeah.
Okay. And the colostrum, I just started taking it about a month ago, and it seems to be helping my osteoarthritis in my knees. And I haven't been taking it very long to know for certain, but I wondered if you'd ever looked at colostrum.
Well, colostrum is basically the pre-milk. When a woman or a cow or a goat or any mammal has a baby, the first thing she produces is colostrum before her milk comes in. And the colostrum is a very, very immuno-rich compound. It has lots and lots of immune factors. And it's the first thing that the baby drinks to boost the baby's immunity to protect it against the surrounding environment, because it had just come out of a sterile uterus into a germ-filled world. And its own immune system is not terribly robust yet. So mother's colostrum provides a big immune boost for the baby. Now, I don't know if you have a recently pregnant goat or woman that is providing your colostrum.
Are you getting a powder? Are you buying a powder?
Excuse me? The colostrum powder?
Yeah, are you
buying? Where are you getting your colostrum is the question.
I'll
stick with it and see if
we're asking, where are you getting your colostrum?
What form?
Where's it coming from?
I take it between meals. And a couple times a day, and okay. It seems to help when I go upstairs. My knees don't hurt as much.
Yeah, well, and if you're getting real colostrum, there's a good chance that you are indeed altering your immune response to a anti-inflammatory instead of a pro-inflammatory pathway. Most older people, the anti-inflammatory aspects of our immune system have pretty much faded away. It's part of why older folks get cancer and heart attacks and strokes and degenerative diseases. So your colostrum may well be doing you some good. The question that we're all asking, though, is where are you getting colostrum? Because colostrum is usually what a mammal produces right after giving birth before it starts producing lots of milk. Are you getting goat colostrum, cow colostrum? What kind of colostrum are you getting?
Yeah. Cow colostrum.
All right.
From grass-fed cows.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I would expect you're paying a fair bit for it because, you know, mommy cow is going to produce a whole lot more milk than she does colostrum because she's only going to do the colostrum for a few days, and then she'll produce milk, you know, as long as she's being milked for usually for years. So.
Well, Lou lives in Derry. Area, you know, Whatcom County with all the dairy farms. Yeah, so a lot of access.
More
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Well, have a great day. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lou. Okay, just a few minutes away from our first break, and we do have another caller on the line. Let's quickly get to Hilmer from Redmond. Welcome, Hilmer, to Leading Edge Medicine.
Good morning.
How can we help?
Another Rapamycin Saturday.
Oh, rapamycin for you.
Well, you're the first rapamycin we've had today, though.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I want to make sure I got that rapamycin call in. On last Tuesday, I took my regular dose. I took 6 milligrams. Mm-hmm. It was on Tuesday morning. On Thursday morning, I did a blood draw, and I got the results back yesterday. And when I looked at my triglycerides, I almost fell out of the chair because normally my triglycerides are in the upper 50s, 50, mm-hmm. maybe 60 at the most. On Thursday, it was 150.
Yeah.
And so the rest of the cholesterol profile was like my HDL, like 70. Mm-hmm. LDL was in the 50s. Total cholesterol is like 150. I mean, historically, right in line. But the triglycerides, I go, is this a lab error or what's going on here? And how is it related to rapamycin?
Okay. Well, if I recall correctly, you're kind of skinny to start with. You're not a heavy person.
Are you our patient?
No, I used to be.
Okay. But he calls us often enough. I think I remember.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got about 11% or so body fat.
Yeah, 11% body fat. Yeah. Okay. See, I'm going to lean towards lab boo-boo in you. In a heavier person, the rapamycin shifts metabolism so that you actually start to lose fat. But when you're burning fat, triglycerides often go up. Because what will happen is that fat is broken up and the fat hits the bloodstream. It's no longer in the fat cells. The fat has to come out of the fat cells to be burned. And it'll come out in the form of triglycerides. And so you'll see sometimes a bump in triglycerides for a few days after rapamycin. But I see it more often in people that are overweight because they've got more fat to start kicking triglycerides out. So if you had told me it had gone up 15 or 20%, I just said, yeah, probably the rapamycin. But when you tell me that it tripled, I worry about what the lab did on that one.
All right.
It is
Hilmer, you stay right there, okay? Hilmer, we're going to take our quick break. And we'll be back to talk more about rapamycin in just a moment. This is Leading Edge Medicine.